GM starts trading on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange.
So how much less government will there be in Government Motors?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media, I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. It's the midday update from Marketplace.org for Thursday, November the 18th. A little later, some of those who will chair U.S. House committees have financial ties to the industries they'll oversee. Plus, you can check out an art exhibit in Detroit that features some phony art.
But first, for the first time since its bankruptcy more than a year ago, GM is trading shares, more than $18 billion worth of stock, making it the second largest initial public offering, or IPO, ever. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek-Smith is with us from our New York Bureau with the latest. Good morning, Stacey.
Morning, Steve.
Why are investors so excited about a company that went bankrupt last year?
Well, that bankruptcy changed everything. GM got rid of billions of dollars in debt, especially so-called legacy costs. Those are things like employee health care and retirement. David Cole with the Center for Automotive Research says that's probably saving GM about $5,000 per car. GM just posted its first profit in 6 years.
The last quarter, GM earned about $2 billion, and we are still at a depression level of sales in this industry.
Cole says investors think that when the economy picks up, car sales will too. There's actually now a waiting list to buy GM stock.
All right. Well, what about the government stake in GM? We owned, what, 60% of the company?
Right. Well, the IPO will take the government stake in GM down to about 25%.
And what about all that bailout money, 25%? I mean, are we getting that $50 billion back?
Well, for that to happen, shares of GM would have to go up by more than a third. I asked Mark Zandi with MoodysEconomy.com if he thought that would happen.
While the auto bailout probably will cost taxpayers some money, that's only because we're impatient investors. If we held on to GM stock for longer, I think we would do well and probably at least be made whole.
Zandi thinks the government will sell its shares quickly because it wants out of the car business, and GM will probably be pretty happy to get rid of that Government Motors nickname you mentioned.
All right, Stacey, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Now let's put this GM news in context with Liz Ann Saunders, Chief Investment Strategist at Charles Schwab. She's with us from New York. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
So I'm very good. Thank you. So put this sale of stock in the context of our rocky economic recovery.
Well, I think it does represent some semblance of optimism on the part of both the company as well as the government that this is the right time to do this. I think we have, over the past couple of weeks, seen pretty decent traction in terms of broad economic numbers, even the jobs numbers. So I think this is just another example of an economy that is unlikely to go into a second recession. So I think that's good news.
And Liz, when we hear about IPOs like this one, should listeners think that that means jobs?
Well, not necessarily. I don't know that there's a direct connection. But again, if it relates to animal spirits coming back and optimism on the part of the company about the prospects for their business, ostensibly that should translate into some optimism about job growth. I think that optimism broadly is starting to build anyway, and you know, add this to the list.
Okay. Liz Ann Saunders, Chief Investment Strategist at Charles Schwab. Thanks so much for your insight.
Thank you.
Well, GM is not the only IPO this week, Steve.
Yeah, Jeremy, a bunch of big companies backed by private equity firms are also launching stock offerings. But as Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports from our entrepreneurship desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, the IPOs we're getting may not be the kind of IPOs the economy needs.
The new IPOs include consulting giant Booz Allen and Harrah's Casinos, big companies taken private by buyout firms now going public to make money for their investors. Management consultant Peter Cohen says these IPOs aren't likely to create growth or jobs.
It's really not very good news for entrepreneurship and innovation. A private equity-backed firm that's been around for decades is now going to enrich a bunch of guys who figured out a way of restructuring the balance sheet.
What would be better for the economy? IPOs from promising startups in fields like clean energy and biotech, says Mark Heeson of the National Venture Capital Association.
The vast majority of jobs are created after a company goes public.
There were just 18 venture-backed IPOs in the last 2 years, says Heeson, not nearly enough.
The venture capital community lives on the idea that a couple of their companies are going to be wildly successful, the eBays of the world.
This year, venture-backed IPOs will top 60, half of what's considered healthy. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Starting in January with the 112th Congress, Republicans will control the U.S. House of Representatives and the chairmanships of all House committees. While the chairs have yet to be named, most of the favorites have financial ties to the industries they'll be overseeing. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer reports.
The likely new chairman of the House Financial Services Committee is Alabama Republican Spencer Backus. Backus would replace Massachusetts Democrat Barney Frank, who co-wrote the financial reform law. Financial services companies are among Backus's biggest campaign donors, according to the Center for Public Integrity. Center researcher Josh Israel.
They don't necessarily have to fear him as much as they may have feared Barney Frank.
Backus has called for repealing parts of the financial overhaul. Israel says defense and oil companies gave campaign cash to other likely GOP chairs. Columbia Law professor Richard Berfault says political contributions don't necessarily lead to legislation favoring donors, but they do buy access.
Well, access is the ability to tell your story. You know, you can't get anywhere unless you're able to make your case.
Berfault stresses that corporations make their cases with donations to both parties, but the party in power usually gets more. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
Listening to the Midday Update for Thursday, November 18th. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. For the latest look at the markets, you can go to the numbers at marketplace.org. Now to the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world and how it affects us here in the United States.
The problem facing the Airbus A380 super jumbo jet may be worse than anyone thought. Now the Australian airline Qantas says as many as 40 engines and planes around the world may have to be replaced. A couple of weeks ago, one of the engines on an A380 blew out in midair and forced an emergency landing. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us with the latest from London. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
How big of a problem is this for Airbus?
Well, this is more of a setback for the engine maker, Rolls-Royce, which will surely have to pick up much of the tab for this. Qantas had already grounded its six super jumbos. If 40 engines are recalled, we could be talking about another 10 aircraft belonging to Singapore Airlines and Lufthansa grounded. That's 16 of these huge planes and a very big tab, says David Learmount, who's an editor at Flight International magazine.
That's an awful lot of carrying capacity and an awful lot of money that isn't being earned and a lot of passengers who are having to be put somewhere else.
But Stephen, Rolls-Royce says it's identified where the engine's flaw is. Is that going to solve the problem?
Well, eventually it will fix that problem. Eventually the company will fix the reputational damage too. But that damage is pretty serious. Rolls-Royce, of course, is a name that's synonymous with excellence. By the way, this is not the same as the car company. That was hived off years ago and is now owned by BMW. But the Rolls-Royce name for aero engines has certainly suffered. Right now, airlines that are ordering the Super Jumbo have a choice of engines. They can go for the Rolls-Royce power plant or they can have one made by GE and Pratt and Whitney. So Rolls are very likely to lose a fair amount of business over this.
All right, Marketplace's Stephen Beard with us from London. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
To China now, where prices on consumer goods are rising so fast that even McDonald's says it's going to charge more for its food there. And a report out this morning from the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development says inflation in China will continue for the foreseeable future. The BBC's Chris Hogg reports from Shanghai.
China is a hungry consumer of the world's commodities and food. So if Beijing can slow inflation, it could help both Chinese consumers and others around the world. First, in China, the price of food is what most consumers care about more than anything else. Tom Orlick is China analyst for Stone and McCarthy Research Associates. He says the government can directly intervene in the food markets to directly control the prices of some specific products.
They say to retailers, this month the price for a pound of pork is X. And if we find you selling pork at a higher price than that, we're going to come and we're going to fine you.
However, US and global consumers don't care about the cost of food in China as much as they care about how much Chinese-made toys and clothes will cost on the store shelf. And with rising commodity prices, those products are getting more expensive to make and to sell. In Shanghai, I'm the BBC's Chris Hogg for Marketplace.
Steve, for months now, you and I have been talking about how countries are tackling debt problems.
Yeah, well, a common remedy, Jeremy, we've been hearing has been the raising of a country's retirement age.
Mm-hmm.
And this morning, retirement is the topic of the Marketplace Globalist Quiz. Stefan Richter is publisher and editor-in-chief of theglobalist.com, and he's with us now. Good morning, Stefan.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well.
So my question today is about something that you must spend a lot of time thinking about.
What's that?
How much time you get to spend in retirement compared to people of other countries.
Okay.
Which country of the following ones has the longest period of retirement? Is it Japan, the United States, that would be you, Germany, or France?
The most time in retirement. So that would mean what, the earliest retirement age as opposed
the
to
longest,
life expectancy?
Well, that's part of it.
All of
you know,
that, right, right.
That's a, you know, the effective retirement age is one factor, and longevity, average life expectancy
right.
is another.
Something tells me it's not the United States.
Yeah, we're tough.
Yeah, I know, mm-hmm. I know. So I'm going to guess Germany. Oh.
If you are in Germany, you almost spend 20 years in retirement, while
yeah.
in the United States, it's 17.6. But I'd like to remind you of current headlines. You know, there's a lot of cozy strike action in some country.
Yeah. Well, and Greece is, was not one of the answers, Stefan. So.
No. And Greece is not the leader here, but even though they have a pretty charmed life, except for cutting on their budget.
All right. So I would mm-hmm. say then the next guess I have is France.
The French people almost get to spend a quarter century in retirement.
Oh, wow.
Officially, you know, Sarkozy is fighting about this. They retire at 60. Sarkozy wants to make it 62, but the effective rate right now is that you get to retire at 58.7 years on average. And since the French people in their beautiful country get to live a long time,
yeah.
that's almost a quarter century. It's almost double the Japanese. So let's move to France, man, and retire there.
Drink
good
some champagne,
food
and, absolutely.
All of that stuff.
I'm ready to go whenever you are, Stefan.
Au barricade.
Well, thank you very much. Merci beaucoup.
Au revoir. Ciao.
Stefan Richter. For more insights, check out theglobalist.com.
As we all come closer to retirement age, Steve, doctors say we've got to get a lot of checkups. Well, in Idaho, one physician has asked a county treasurer to include colonoscopy reminders in everyone's annual tax notices. It seems like a pretty healthy idea, right?
Sure it does. Absolutely.
Well, not to the county treasurer, Steve. She denied the request because she said, recommending a colonoscopy in the same envelope as a tax notice may be considered ironic.
Ooh.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Thursday, November the 18th. I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York.
I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. So everyone is trying to balance the budget. We got the plan last week from the President's Deficit Commission. Yesterday, there was another plan announced.
And Steve, I'm sure we're going to get a lot more proposals in the coming weeks. But our economics correspondent, Chris Farrell, has found a disturbing trend in these deficit-cutting plans, and he's with us now to talk about it. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
So what's the similarity between these plans?
Well, it's an underappreciated aspect of these plans is that they give baby boomers, the generation that has created the fiscal mess, basically a pass on fixing the problem.
They're getting off the hook. What do you mean? What are the examples of this?
It's really noticeable in the Bowles-Simpson plan. All right,
yep.
So they say we're going to boost the retirement age for Social Security to age 69 by 2075. The boomers are going to be dead by then. Okay, so you're going to gradually hike the federal gas tax by 15%, all right? Starting in 2013. Aging boomers, they're not going to be driving much when they're old. And, with tax reform, you eliminate the child, you know, tax credit. Well, guess what? Hopefully, the kids are out of the house. So if you just go through all these things, it's not going to affect the boomers that much.
So why are they designing the plans this way?
The main reason is going on is that you want to protect aging boomers because they've lived under one set of rules. For example, mortgage tax deduction. Well, a lot of boomers went out there, bought a house with a mortgage tax deduction. You take it away. That seems unfair. But the thing is, the more that you protect the boomers, the more you pass the costs on to future generations. And that doesn't seem fair to me.
And, of course, the boomers are the ones who vote. Do you think that they will end up paying a price at any point in the end here?
Yes, I do. And for two reasons. One, there's going to be a lot of negotiation. And in that negotiation, boomers are going to end up paying a bigger price. But here's the real thing, Jeremy. You know, if you look at the long-term budget deficit, the fundamental issue is the rising cost of Medicare. That's the real problem.
Yeah.
And in the end, that's where a lot of the changes are going to be. And boomers, they're starting to file for Medicare.
Marketplace economics correspondent Chris Farrell, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot.
A new study commissioned by a liberal think tank says the state of Arizona's economy has suffered because of its controversial immigration law. The Center for American Progress says boycotts and lost convention business cost that state at least $45 million this year and could amount to as much as $750 million in future losses. Angela Kelly is co-author of the study, and she's vice president of immigration policy and advocacy at the Center for American Progress. Angela, good morning.
Morning.
How do we differentiate this big downturn between boycotts and just a lousy economy?
The study looked very carefully at cancellations of conferences and conventions that really happened in the time frame immediately after the law was passed and into early fall. And then it looked at losses from booking declines.
If there is a downturn, and you say there is, in convention business, who does that affect the most?
Well, it affects everybody who resides in Arizona. It diminishes direct spending by $217 million. We see reduced revenue, $133 million in lost earnings, $14.4 million in lost taxes. It robs folks of jobs, 4,236 jobs that aren't going to happen.
How does a research firm figure out future activity? I mean, don't these issues fade over time?
You know, with a lot of issues, you're right. They fade away. People lose attention. But that's the thing. The persistent problem with our broken immigration system is that it doesn't go away. And when you have 25 states that are considering Arizona-like measures, big convention and conference states like a Florida, like a Texas, like a Virginia. So it's not an issue that's going to fade away for long, frankly, until lawmakers solve our broken immigration system.
I'm going to play the devil's advocate here and ask you about the flip side. Could there be a positive impact from groups that agree with the state's immigration stance, its law?
Perhaps, and I don't know how many they are. We know that, you know, almost before the ink was dry, that there were conferences that were canceling. A large African-American fraternity canceled its conference. 600 people right then and there just not showing up. So it's not really a good way to do business where you pass laws and you take a chance that, hey, maybe this political statement will be attractive to some and will just kind of bear the brunt of who it's distasteful to.
Angela Kelly, co-author of the study and vice president of immigration policy and advocacy at the Center for American Progress. Angela, thanks.
Thank you.
And finally, Steve, the exhibit Fakes, Forgeries, and Mysteries opens this weekend at the Detroit Institute of Arts. It's a collection that includes works that turned out to be phony.
Yeah, well, museum visitors will be able to try and identify whether some of the art is authentic. Admission is $8 for adults. Just for fun, Jeremy, try paying with counterfeit bills.
Yeah, we'll see where that gets you. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This podcast is produced by Shelley Moulton, Ethan Lindsay, Jolie Myers, and Vahan Baladuni.
In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do
the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.